4CRB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for another program of The Law and You, your opportunity to get free legal advice. The only thing you need to do is get on the telephone, and our number is 55208888. That's 55208888. South of the Tweed River, of course, you need to put 07 in front of the number. And remember that you can send questions through by email if you wish. The email address is talkback@4crb.com. That's talkback@4crb.com, and we would be able to deal with those questions in our program next week. We had a few little technical issues with the phones last week in the first part of the program, but fortunately that all seems to be behind us, so you can rest assured that if you telephone this morning, you'll get straight through, and that's 55208888, and you could actually be our first caller if you get on the telephone straight away. So 55208888. Please don't leave it to the last 5 minutes or so of the program when quite often we get a bank up of calls, which forces some calls to be taken off air. We much prefer to deal with those calls on air so we can not only provide advice to you, but also assist many people out there listening who may not have the opportunity to get to the phone. But while we're waiting for some calls to come through, you may remember that I was talking last week about the Australian Taxation Office and the fact that they are becoming very active in the space of tax avoidance, particularly relating to overseas income, trusts that are operating overseas, etc., through the ATO task force. And they've also now launched a new drive of enforcement against foreign income, which is coming into Australia disguised as gifts or loans. And this is money that may show up in someone's bank account as being transferred to them from a family member overseas, or as a loan from a business entity they may have overseas, etc., but in reality is in fact income. And ATO are certainly onto that, and they've now got an enforcement drive in that area. As I suggested last week, I'm quite sure there's no coincidence that the ATO is becoming extremely active in all areas, endeavouring to gather in funds for the government with the substantial deficit that's been caused in the budget as a result of the COVID lockdowns, etc. So it's unsurprising to see this is happening. The other thing too that was interesting to see is that Australia's Serious Financial Crime Task Force has in the last 6 years successfully prosecuted and obtained convictions against 15 individuals, which have led to the combined raising of liabilities of over $1 billion to the Australian government. So as you can see, the ATO are certainly moving very strongly in that area. So it's good to see that the ATO are doing that, because at the end of the day, the burden of meeting that deficit is going to fall upon us as the taxpayers and future generation. So it's very important that we can see everyone taking their fair share. But the name of the program today, or the name of the game, is your calls, and we presently don't have any callers online. We believe the phones are working quite okay. So 55208888 is the number. That's 55208888 if you have a question or a query, and you'd be able to get straight through to us on that number. Another issue that I saw during the week, and I'm sure it doesn't affect any of our listeners at all, but just nonetheless noteworthy, and that is that there have been tough new changes to Queensland's drink driving laws that have now been introduced, that see the requirement for the installation of alcohol interlocks in cars of drivers now convicted of mid-range drink driving offences. So that means that if you have a blood alcohol content of between 0.1 and 0.149, they're regarded as the mid-range offences, and the requirement for the ignition interlock will be extended to people who are convicted of drink driving offences who drive in that range. The other useful thing too that I think the government has done in this space is they're also providing that all drink driving offenders must complete an education intervention program before they can actually reapply for their driver's licence, which I think is a wonderful idea, just to educate people on the dangers of drink driving. I don't think many of us need much prompting to know that drink driving is indeed a very, very dangerous thing to do, and you're in fact 20 times more likely to be involved in an accident if you've been drinking than someone that hasn't been drinking. And of course the net result of that is that if you're 20 times more likely to be involved in an accident, you're 20 times more likely to either be injured yourself or more seriously injure someone else in that accident. And the other thing that you need to bear in mind is that if you do get convicted of drink driving, then don't forget that your comprehensive insurance is voided by a conviction for drink driving, which means that if you have an accident in your car and you're found to have a higher blood alcohol content than is permitted by law, and of course bear in mind that's 0.05, so if you're 0.05 or higher, then your insurance on your car is voided, so any damage that you may cause to any other vehicle involved, or to if you run into a building or something of that nature, is going to fall on you solely. But enough of that. We have our very first caller for this morning, and we say a very good morning to Jennifer. G'day, Jennifer. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
How can we help?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just ringing up. My husband, I had to put him into a nursing home,
mm-hmm.
and we put a deposit down, but what happens to me when he dies? What happens to the house when I go into, when he's in a nursing home, what happens to me if I have to go into one?
Right, okay. Well, first of all, if you and your husband were obviously living together in your home, prior to him going into nursing care, whether he's required to pay a RAD, which is a residential accommodation deposit, or part of a RAD, will depend on your assets, excluding your home. And the fact that you're living in that home, you can't be forced to sell the home while you remain living there, because it's your home as well, and so therefore you can't be expected to sell the home to pay for the a full RAD for your husband to go into care. If you can only pay part of the RAD that's assessed, then you may be required to make additional payments that are higher than what would otherwise be required if the full RAD's paid. But if you later have to go into care, then again there will be a similar assessment made, and it will depend on the assessment as to whether it will be necessary for you to sell the home, because the simple answer to that question is going to be whether you're in a position to be able to pay the RAD that you're required to pay for you to enter into care.
I'm sorry, I misled you at the beginning. Yes, we did put a bond down, $395,000 for him.
And is that the full RAD or is that only a part payment?
Full. No, that's the full RAD. Okay, I'm living in the house.
Yes, okay, so you've paid the full
RAD.
So
what happens if I have to go into a nursing home because I haven't got that money?
No, that's right. So if you have to go into a nursing home, then unfortunately the home will probably need to be sold. So that you can pay your own RAD.
The house isn't in my name. The
house is in your husband's name. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's paid the full RAD to go in. That'll be an interesting situation, actually, Jennifer. I think what you probably should do is get some specialist advice in relation to those circumstances. I don't know that given that your husband has paid the full RAD, I don't know that they can force you to sell the house to pay a RAD. So it very well may be, depending on your assets circumstances, that you're not required to pay a RAD. But what I would suggest you do is I would suggest that you seek some professional advice in relation to what those requirements might be. You could, in fact, go and see the Department of Social Security through Services Australia, and they would be able to give you advice at this time about what the likely circumstances that you may face when you go into when it's necessary for you to go into care, and what will happen with the house. The other alternative may be that the house can be rented and the income used to assist. Do you have a power of attorney for your husband?
No, unfortunately. My husband didn't have a power of attorney. I had to apply to the guardianship board
through
to be
QCAT.
His financial manager.
Right. So, yes. So you're his you're the administrator of his financial affairs and the guardian for his personal and health affairs. Okay.
Yes.
So right. So yes, I think it's going to be very important, Jennifer, that you do get some advice going forward, just as to what options are available to you. Because you'll also need to look at what can be done, for example, if you were to rent the house out, where the income from the house would need to go, because technically that is your husband's asset, and so the income off that would belong to your husband if you were to rent it out. You could sell it, but depending on the orders that were made through QCAT, you may not be able to apply money from the sale of the house to pay a RAD for yourself, unless there is a variation to the orders that were made which allow you to enter into what are referred to as conflict transactions. So there's a number of issues there, Jennifer, that I think you need to carefully consider. Probably, unfortunately, outside the scope of what we are able to talk to you about on air this morning, because obviously we have to go into things like chapter and verse, and it's just not within the possibility of this program to do that. So I would be recommending that you initially speak. Do you have a financial advisor at all?
Yes, we do, but I'm not too impressed with him. I do know what's in my husband's will because I have three stepchildren.
Oh, right, okay. Well, it sounds to me like you need to get some independent advice. If you were to give Finance Forum a call on Thursday morning, they're on this Thursday morning.
They are, and the first Thursday of every month is Services Australia.
So there are two options available for you, Jennifer. So Services Australia, of course, is Centrelink, and Finance Forum will be on this Thursday. They're on every second Thursday. So give them a call, because they very well may be able to give you a recommendation to a financial advisor who specialises in the area of entry into aged care, because it is a specialised area. There are a number of financial advisors on the Gold Coast who specialise in that space. So I would be recommending that you give them a call on Thursday, and hopefully they can give you a recommendation. I would also suggest to you that it may be a good idea to be just looking at what orders you have in place through QCAT, and also what the situation is in terms of your husband's will, as to what is provided, given that it's obviously a second marriage. There are children of a previous marriage there, to know what's going to happen as far as provision for you is concerned in the event of your husband passing away.
I know what's going to happen when he passes away, but I'll certainly do what this Thursday morning.
Yes,
I'll listen.
Yes.
I belong to this radio station. I listen to it all the time, so I'll do that.
Fantastic,
thank you so
Jennifer.
Much for your
no
time.
Trouble at all.
Have
thank
a beautiful
you for the
day.
Call. You too.
Yeah, bye.
And the time on 4CRB has just passed 19 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. 5520888 is that number. That's 5520888. Very quiet morning indeed this morning. So if you want to get straight through, get on the telephone right now. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Bell Legal Group is the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Their highly experienced team of professionals can provide assistance in wills and estate planning, property law and conveyancing, family law, business and commercial law, and much, much more. Contact our sponsor, Bell Legal Group, on 5597 3366. That number again, 5597 3366. Or learn more about what they can offer you at belllegal.com.au.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number, 5520 8888. That's 5520 8888. As I said, a very quiet week, two in a row, which is quite unusual. It's we've normally got a board full of calls by now, which we don't. So if you have a question or a query this morning, you can give us a call right now and you're going to get straight through. 5520 8888. And look at that. Someone took my advice and we say a very good morning to Margaret. G'day, Margaret. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, John.
That's good. How can we help you today?
I'm hoping to ask this and not get all sort of confused, but my husband died intestate many years ago, and of course my child was underage, mm-hmm. and a third share, yes. which I understand all this, of that home, when it was sold, would go into a trust for my child. Mm-hmm. Now, when that home was sold, this third share was put into a trust, mm-hmm. We had to call on it a few times for school and et cetera. But the residue, when she was turned 18, was paid out, mm-hmm. right, to right. her. Now, what my question is, any home that I bought thereon, does her name still go on it?
No, well, the short answer to the question is no. The only time that your daughter's name may be involved in the purchase of a further home by you would be if there were circumstances where you actually borrowed money from that one-third that was going to your daughter, the one-third that was held in trust. So if the trustee of the trust for her agreed to, and assuming that I would assume that under the Trusts Act it would have been possible to do this, then the trustee might own a share in the home, or the other alternative would be if you borrowed some of the money out of that one-third share and the trustee of the trust took a mortgage over your property to allow you to borrow that money. But if you've purchased outright a home in your name using your money and you've not used any of that money that related to your child's share of her late father's estate, then the short mm-hmm. answer to your question is no. That home is yours and it's yours to do with as you see fit under your will, free
right.
of that trust.
Okay, then.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very, very much, John.
Okay, Margaret, glad to be able to help.
Yeah, wonderful show.
Thank you for that. Bye now. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to, or just past 23 minutes past 9, as we say hi to Lorraine. G'day, Lorraine. How are you today?
Good morning, John.
Yes, how are you, Lorraine?
I'm well, thank you. My question to you is, after our death, have formed a testamentary trust,
yes.
which monies earned off that capital mm-hmm. will go towards our hospital where we were born and bred, the area. And what we wanted to know is, how long does that testamentary trust last? We did hear that it only lasts 80 years and then the money goes to that the likes of the hospital. Is that correct or not?
Well, it depends whether it's been done as a charitable trust or not. So that is the thing that you need to look at. Normally, a testamentary discretionary trust is the same as any normal trust. So the period of time for a testamentary trust is 80 years.
80 years.
Yes, but if it's done as a charitable trust, then in fact those trusts go on in perpetuity. So it would probably be advisable to check with the lawyer that drew up the trust for you to see whether it is in fact a charitable trust in nature.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that she had drawn up that it was a charitable trust.
Well, if that's the case, then it probably is not bound by the rules against perpetuity, and it would be able to go on indefinitely.
Very good. Thank you very much for your answer.
Okay, Lorraine, all the very best. And we say good morning to Marion. G'day, Marion. How are you today? Hi, Marion. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks.
How can we help you today?
Oh, look, I'm just wondering if you can elaborate a wee bit, just give me a crash course, some basic info regarding trust accounts for your children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, because I do not know anything, but if you had, should we, is it a wise step, to maybe liquidate some of our assets, put it in a trust account for our children, and what is the difference between doing that and the regular situation of them liquidating everything after we die? Is there some benefit? Is there...
Right. Okay. Well, look, a lot depends on the nature and value of assets. So what you're probably talking about doing, what I would suggest that you would consider doing is that if you have assets that are liquid assets, you could possibly consider setting up what's referred to as a family trust and putting... Are your children now adults or are they still minors?
Yes.
They're all adults.
No, all adults.
And are there any grandchildren as well?
There are.
Okay. So yes. You could set up a family trust now. That family trust would give you and presumably your spouse the ability or the discretion as to who you'll pay the income from the trust to. So you could allocate part of the income from that trust to the one or more of the children if you wanted to, but equally you could decide to allocate that income to yourself. So that gives you great flexibility. The other option would be to have those assets go into a testamentary discretionary trust under your will. And by doing that, you have that same flexibility after your passing that you have through a family trust or an inter vivos trust during your lifetime. But the bigger advantage of the testamentary trust is that infant beneficiaries, so in this case grandchildren, are taxed at the same rate as a normal adult taxpayer. And so that would mean that you could allocate, or your executors or the trustees of those trusts could allocate income to your grandchildren, for example, to pay school fees in pre-tax dollars rather than after-tax dollars. And the other advantage, of course, is that infant beneficiaries under a family trust can only be allocated $416 before they're taxed at the top marginal rate, whereas under a testamentary discretionary trust, children are treated exactly the same as any other taxpayer. So I would suggest that you get some good advice. I would suggest that you go and see your financial advisor, if you have one, to talk through the financial aspects of what you're trying to achieve. And then from there, you need to see a lawyer who's competent in the area of estate planning and or trust to be able to set up a trust for you according to what your needs are, be that an inter vivos trust, which would be a family discretionary trust now, or set up testamentary discretionary trusts under your will. All right, then.
And what is the actual benefit or the is it a better situation to use a trust rather than a regular, ordinary...
Just a straight-out inheritance?
Yes.
Well, one major advantage of a testamentary trust is that the trust protects the assets. So if one of your children is going through matrimonial difficulties, if the trust has been set up correctly, it will provide maximum protection in relation to the assets that are in that trust. It also provides protection for your children from being sued by creditors, etc. So there's a whole range of issues that do benefit you if you use a testamentary trust or even a family trust. All right, then.
Okay. Yes, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is 29 minutes past nine. We'll say a quick hello to Bruce. But, Bruce, we have to be quick. We've got the local news coming up. How can we help?
Hello.
Is that Bruce?
My daughter. Yes. Hello, how are you?
Going well, thanks.
And my daughter's... Good. My daughter's recently gone through a divorce.
Yes.
And her ex-husband has been living with his partner for nearly 3 years now, so he's de facto. Now, I just want to ask quickly, the will he made when he first separated from my daughter,
mm-hmm.
is that still valid now that he's in a de facto relationship and they're actually, you know, divorced?
Well, if he made that will before your daughter and he divorced, then any benefit that was left to your daughter under that will no longer is applicable. And if he, but his entering into a de facto relationship does not invalidate that will. It will only be if he marries his new partner that will becomes invalid. All right.
So should he make a new will then? Because originally he was going to leave it to his sons, but now...
Well, he certainly should make sure that he has a valid will in place, which sets out whatever his wishes are, and he needs to be very mindful of whether he in fact intends to marry his new partner or not, and if he does, he can make a will that's in contemplation of marriage. But we'll have to leave it there, I'm sorry.
Thank you. We're just pressing up to the news.
Thank you now. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. Thank you for that late flurry of calls. We'll be back next week, but until then, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm, helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 55 97 33 66.